V'kimu shnayim v'vitlu echad.
What's that kriti mean?
It's not clear, but it must mean na'arim.
Is it a Hebrew word?
Not particularly. V'echad katuv echad esrehi, uv'shnayim matzu katuv echad asar, echad katuv echad asar hu, uv'shnayim matzu katuv echad asar hi, v'kimu shnayim v'vitlu echad. Okay, so that's slightly different. In other words, according to this version, everywhere in the Torah, it had the P written with a Vav and not with a U. Okay? Let's take a look at...
the implication being that there weren't many Torahs in Eretz Yisrael at the time. Otherwise, why would these be...
If that's always under the assumption that you're reading the story as if this was a decision procedure of selecting two as opposed to one. But that's very unlikely. I mean, what kind of evidence is it in any event? If you, as you say, if there are only three Sefer Torah, what is the probability that you're going to be right?
Maybe it's four. Maybe it's four.
Did I be all right?
Yes.
Supposedly. No, not the newer version.
Okay. So let's see how Talmon interprets this. Let's go to his page 22. We can just read it together because I think his interpretation is basically correct. It is conceivable, he says, that the variant reading Ma'ol Ma'ona alludes to those texts in which no distinction had as yet been made between closed and open. That it, i.e. the medial and the final forms of Natzfach, as we read in Yerushalmi in Megillah that we just read, the Jerusalemites used to write Yerushalayim and Safon without, and Teman without discriminating. Vestiges of that transitory state survive in the Masoretic text, Lamuba, Heim Perutzim, where you see the mems, wrong types of mems in the wrong positions. More such readings were preserved, for example, in the Torah scroll of the synagogue of Severus, as was recorded in Reshit Rabbati, and Torchina brings all of these examples, Eliphaz ben Eda, and Eliphaz ben Eda with the N curved, Mimishpachat b'nei Yosef, Roshay b'nei Yosef, ben Yosef k'tir, Lo yodati yom moti is one, as the two mems, both the same. Okay, Vayerdu Mitzrayim, Vayerdu Mitzrayimo. Vekvara Sham, Vayasham Ktiv, without with a mem for Tuach, etc. Another explanation for the variance between the Ma'on Codex and the Ma'onah Codex was given by Bamberger, who erroneously thought that the Safek Hei, which distinguishes the text that was accepted from one that was rejected, here indicates the locative. As a result, he drew an analogy to the matter in discussion from the Yerushalmi Nivamot, Rabbi Shimon Elazar taught, I told the Kutim, what caused you to err? The fact you are not the principle of Nechemya. The name of Nechemya was thought that every word which should have a prefix lo and lamed, it does not have it receive a suffix he. In other words, Bamberger maintains that the Ma'on Codex was a Samaritan text in which the directional suffix was erroneously omitted without a substituting for the previous lamed. This opinion is untenable since the Samaritan version has the reading Ma'onai lo hekedem exactly as the Masoretic text. Furthermore, the omission of the suffix te is not one of the distinctive features of the Samaritan version, which even adds the suffix in some instances where it does not appear in the Masoretic text. As a matter of fact, the Ma'onah Codex diverged from the Ma'on Codex not in the inclusion of the directional suffix, but in the use of an alternative form of the same word. One text has a masculine formulation, while the other forms the feminine formulation. Actually, we're dealing with two synonymous forms which may have developed from the defective spelling ma'on ma'ona, like na'ar na'ara, we find na'ara sometimes without the hey, lai laila. This phenomenon is quite common in diverse sets of parallel biblical texts. And then he lists a whole lot of them. The same holds true for ma'on ma'ona. Both forms are found concurrently in biblical literature. To be sure, they cannot be derived by any certainty from one root. Ma'onah is implied, etc. So we may assume that the variants cited in our sources were not the only readings which set the minority manuscripts apart from the majority whose text was sanctioned, but it was these variants that were used to conveniently designate these codices, which ultimately they were named after them. until ultimately they were named after him. From this we may deduce that these variants were not mere random textual deviations, but were rather considering distinguished signs for types of text that the rabbi sought to remove from circulation. In other words, his interpretation here, which I think makes much more sense than simply reading that this was a majority rule, was that, in fact, what was going on here was a process of establishing the Masoretic text, the final version, and these were older versions with various substantial differences. Okay? And they were taken out of circulation. This we can deduce from other discussions which deal with books that deviated from the authoritative text of the Pentateuch. Rabbinical tradition reports that they wrote for him by Ishlachat Zatutei B'nei Yisrael, for King Talmi, Ve'el Zatutei B'nei Yisrael Lo Shalachat Yodo. This is information is recorded in a list of corrections of the Sofrim, which were entered into the Hebrew original, as it were, from which the Greek translation of the Pentateuch was prepared for King Talmi. The great majority of corrections enumerated here, there are not to be found in any extant biblical texts. This applies also to the reading of Zatutei for Na'areh, but the account of the three scrolls of the law gives evidence to the fact that this variant was actually current in a manuscript of considerable importance that was preserved in the temple. In fact, the report about the scroll that was reported for King Ptolemy does not really deal with corrections of the Sofrim that were embodied in the text by the initiative and the approval of the rabbis, but rather with variant readings which circulated amongst Jews, especially among groups which did not submit to the authority of the leaders of normative Jewry. The formulation they wrote for him only represents an effort to camouflage the failure of the rabbis to ban these divergent readings and to remove them from circulation. The representation of conditions and situations that are actually outside the sphere of the rabbis' influence as determined by them or legally authorized by them shows some light on their efforts to maintain a single central control and to attenuate the shocks of social schism which harassed the Jewry in the generations between the time of Alexander and the destruction of the Second Temple. We are unable to define precisely the nature of these dissident groups owing to the paucity of historical and manuscript evidence that has been preserved for us from that time. But by reason of the foregoing discussion, we may conjecture that Sefer Hu represents a type of manuscript accepted by extreme conservative groups who were singularly punctilious about the text of the Bible and strove to maintain it throughout in an ancient form which resisted the intrusion of spelling novelties such as he. The Sefer Zatuti, on the other hand, is representative of those textual traditions which were open to Aramaic influences, owing to linguistic usages common to the time of the copyists. Example of these are the complete scroll of Isaiah from the Judean desert and the Pentateuch text from which the Greek translation, commonly called the Septuagint, was made. At the outset, we should expect that the readings Zatuti would have been rejected on linguistic grounds. Whether the word is to be derived from the Zend language, as was suggested by Perlis, from the Greek as proposed by Geiger, or whether it be an Aramaic word, which seems most likely, it is an alien, late and secondary reading inferior to the pure Hebrew reading Na'areh B'nei Yisrael. But its rejection on text critical grounds, because it's being late and secondary, would necessitate the application of the same criteria for deciding between other divergent texts, such as Sefer He and Sefer Hu. It would have been logical to prefer from this point Sefer Hu, because it preserved an ancient spelling. However, a decision to favor this reading was plainly impossible. Argument under analysis transmits a report not about the creation of a textus receptus, but about the confirmation and authorization of a reading which had already been accepted by the rabbis for unspecified reasons, and of the rejection and banishment of alternative readings which were probably current among the adherents of dissident groups. For this reason, the rabbis did not attempt to correct the codex of the temple court whose reading was rejected, but discarded it instead. In other words, they banished it from use in their own society and banded it, much against their will, to those circles which were not subject to the legislation. This sifting of readings was not an aim in itself, but rather served the normative community as a measure of self-defense against the various groups of dissidents. It was intended, first and foremost, to create a stable textual tradition in those parts of the Old Testament which used as proof text in the religious social controversies of the time. The authorization of a reading on the strength of a fortuitous majority of two codices against one out of three found in the temple court was a mere formality, a sort of expedient peg onto which to hang a legal decision which accorded official recognition to a factual situation which obtained intendedly this act of recognition. In other words, what he's saying is that you shouldn't take the story that they selected, they were deciding at this very last moment as to whether it should say Ma'onah, Elokei Kedem, or Ma'on, but rather that this is talking about the fact that various texts of the Torah were sort of put into the Geniza in the temple because they deviated from the actual accepted text.
Well, why is it that, however, decision in favor of this reading, maybe who was plainly impossible? Why was it plainly impossible?
Because he's saying that they all had already accepted
he,
and therefore they couldn't reject, go back to the who, the purely above reading, on the grounds of conservatism, and therefore they couldn't reject Zatute simply on the grounds of conservatism, but that's a different.
But the peculiar thing is, most of the time he is wrong.
Yeah, he said, and his claim is that the ancient reading was always with above,
yeah,
and that some of them came in, and that was the text that they had officially received. He doesn't give the reasons why.
No, I think Ellen's point is that since they do have who, since we still do have who, what is the big deal?
Yeah,
I mean, it just doesn't seem.
Okay. So I also got for you Tarchina's original article, which is also extremely interesting.
It all about the one principle of the Rambam, that the text we have in our hands is the one that we can more look at.
If he knows
the relevant to Morris, why would he say?
Well, the Rambam himself is sort of the last ingredient, the last stage in the finalization of the Masoretic text that we have. In other words, his giving his seal of approval to the Ben Asher text, for example, and finally formalizing everything. I think the Rambam, in a sense, represents the last major establishment of the Masoretic the way we know it. Let me briefly summarize to you what Turchunis says in this article. What he says in this article. Yes. Oh, yes. No, he looked at it. What Turchina says is that, in fact, the development of the. That first of all, in the Mansapach, you have to distinguish between the M and the other four letters. Because the Nun, the Tzadik, the Kaf, etc., is a difference between an elongated letter, like let's take the Nun, the difference between a straight stroke and a curved. Okay. And his point is that the original version of the Nun, for example, was always what we would call Nun Sofit. And that because of the tendency towards a cursive script, the Nun that was in the middle of a word got this little bend on the bottom because you were getting ready to write the next letter. That this was a phenomenon that was not happening only in Hebrew. That this was that the Ktav Ashurit was basically the form of the Aramaic script, which was sort of the common language and common way of writing throughout the Middle East during this period. It was the sort of the government document, and this tendency towards making the things more cursive was happening with various letters, and the Nun, the Tzadach, the Fe, etc., were all subject to this change. The Mem, on the other hand, you can see he gives you some pictures of the eventual forms of the Mem. So you have the early Mem, and then you have the Mem which was in the papyrus, and then you have the open Mem, and then finally the closed Mem. And similarly, the Samach originally was completely open. And then finally it became closed. So...
Looks like a Zion.
So again, he's saying that the original forms of these letters weren't, that this change was taking place gradually, And in fact, in other languages, like in Arabic, there was always, all letters became divided into two forms, as an end form and a beginning form. But at the time that the final version and the establishment of the Masoretic text was taking place, after the period of the capture of the Yerushalmi Torah, for example, by Severus, they already had these differences between these four letters, and including the mem, the fifth letter. On the other hand, the hey was tending in the opposite direction. And that, once again, this was sort of fixing, freezing in time, a development that had been taking place throughout the Middle East in the orthography.
What was the purpose? If I put this development towards having two final letters for some letters, if you had a development that all the letters tended to have two forms, I could understand. But why?
Well, some of the straighter ones, it was happening gradually, he says, to all letters.
It just that these were more prone to it.
These were more prone to it, and it stopped at that particular time.
Okay.
So
looking at the mesh patterns, the time of the Asians way afterwards, the line between
what?
No.
Where? Should probably talk more.
Yeah, but there's something about that. Does that have different meaning that
No.
Or is that a mistake?
Just a mistake, no problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, the papyrus itself is correct.
You know how to read?
Well, I mean, given a little help.
But you can see that the mems are not consistently open or closed in the.
So you're saying a development of it so big was a question of cursive development?
That's right. So here, if you turn to his page 111, I guess, on the question of what the meaning of the hey is, and we told Kachni Kenso Sub Gamma Perush Lokoko Asheni Shalotah Mamabu Talmud Yerushalmi Shalskaru Lamala Torah Rishonim Lo Yelam Hey Shalahem Lo Velo Mem Shalahem Satur. Gam Kan Eshalu Kuvat Tzurat HaHei Astuma Lo Safek Mitoch Tzurat HaHei Atuma. כמו ששם שבר פירוסים הערביים גם יצא יהודים מאות השנים. ופתחה הצורה השלטת על גבי הגלוסקימו. אבל למשל בכתובת הגלוסקימו מירושלים, יהודה בן אמרם שנזכר למעלה, מופיעות וזוכניק מאיר על כך שתי צורות אלו של ה. העתיקה והצעירה יחד בשם יהודה, מתוך אותו מילה זו על גבי על יד זו. אבל כשם שנולדה מתוך התו הפתוחה בתעודות יהודיות וסוד גם תו לולאה סתומה, כך בערב הסורת את ספר התהל, לא אשר התפתה מתפצועות הקליפות, וכיבה מהירה מובנת עם אליה. Okay, so here you can see the both forms of the hay, and and now he gives a nice interpretation to the Gemara. המוסך המסורתי שלנו בכתוך התפתחות זו, כי אז עלינו לשפוט שהוא אמנם צעיר מן התקופה בית, what is this תקופה בית is, there's various listings of times on the previous page. Okay. Heimar im Ktiv Shonel Gamri Ad L'Toch HaMeya HaShniya Achar HaSifra Gam HaYidiyot Al Sifro Shel Rabbi Meir Al Shinuyeh HaNiskaot Shem Gilat Saveros וכמה ציטטות ידועות מן הוויכוח המורות בספרות התלמודות מעידות על שינוי נוסח לגבי אותו הנוסח המסורתי הקבוע של פנינו. ועל כן, עלינו להבדיל בין שני תאריכים, מועד התהבותו של אותו הטופס המניח ביסודו של המסורות שלנו מצד אחד, ומצד אחד מאוד קריאותו של הטופס כזה כיסוד מחייב ומשורת הנוסח לדור. In other words, first there's a question of when this was created, and then when was this established as the standard. Lo ha'tek tzair, ela tofes kadum en ha'tkufa shel lefnei ha'tkufa minach b'yisodo shel ha'nusach ha'masorti, u'klalei ha'ktiv ha'nogin bo. Ein lefaneinu ela chazara ela minhag kadum b'ktiv. אחרי שהתפתחות כבר התקדמה, ואחרי שכבר נעלמה למשל המימרה הפתוחה מתוך הכתב הרגיל. וכך מתברר לנו שעובדות היסטוריות מונחות, ביסוד הידיעות התלמודיות, בין באלו מארץ ישראל ובין בים ובבל. עובדה היא יוצאת מתוך הכתובות עצמם, שהשימוש הקדום בנוגע להיותות מנצפה חייב באמת נשכח לגמרי, עד שהם מוכרחים לחזור ולייסד אותו על פי הטופס מזמן קדום. He's saying that the establishment of the final version of the same Torah, the way we've written it, was a reversion, at least an orthographic style, to something that had existed a couple of centuries previously and had been in part forgotten. אמנם נכון הוא שהמאמר מנצפח סופים אמרו, מה שהתקימו לוחד סופים מראה את כל הסימנים של דרוש אגדי, אבל אין הדרוש האגדי כאן אלא החזרת הצורות הכפולות, אלא שהיא עובדה היסטורית, אלא על כך לבד שמצאו רמז לצורך החזרתם בעצם אותיות מנצפח, מנצפח הרי זה מין סופך. ואם נשאל איפה מי הם אנשים שקבעו קביעה סופית את שימוש הצורות הכפולות על יסוד טופס קדום או טפסים קדמים, קדומים, כי אז עלינו לזהותם בלי ספק עם אותם אנשים בני דורו של רבי מאיר, שדרשו על פי התלמוד ירושלמי את היות דברות מנצפח כבר בנוריהם, רבי אליעזר, רבי יהושע, ועל פי בראשית רבה גם רבי עקיבא. כי עד לאותו זמן מגיעות הידיעות על שינוי נוסח בתורה מצד אחד, ועל שימוש של אותיות כפולות מצד אחר. ואם אולם, אם מתוך הדברי ירושלמי בהמשך הדברים הרעמית, נדמה כאילו זה אותם הצעירים הצופים עצמם, הצדק לעומת זו המתואר בבלי, הרואה בהם על פי השימוש מולד סופה במקורת הנביאים, etc. So in other words, what he's saying is that indeed the story about these letters having been forgotten and having resurrected has indeed a historical foundation. Not that the Nevi'im forgot something from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, but rather that at the final time of the establishment of the text of the Torah, the way we know it today, there was a reversion in orthographic style to a style that had existed a century previous. So the time when they were... In other words, the Torah HaRishonim represented an intermediate stage between the original style, the graphic... That's a recognition of the change from the really ancient document. This is within the framework of the square letters. There was an evolution and our decision to clearly differentiate between these forms is a reversion back to an ancient orthography. And that, in a sense, answers the question that you raised. And in other words, there was sort of a tendency in general towards a passage from straight letters to a semi-cursive writing, like on the moon and so on. And then, at some stage, there was, when the text of the Torah was finally canonized the way we have it today, at the same time, there was, perhaps in order to aid in the process, there was a reversion to a somewhat archaic writing, and that's why there was this fixing of these five letters and the differentiation between the beginning and the end. So it's a nice interpretation of both from Tarchiner's article and from Talmon's article. I think we have a reasonable explanation of two very difficult passages, the Manzvach Tzofim Amarum on the one hand, and the business of the Shloshah Sifrei Torah. it more or less supports most
of this theological philosophy.
I don't know, you know. Now, I also Xeroxed for you various articles on the question of the reading of the Sefer Torah. We discussed most of the contents of these articles, but I thought you'd find them useful. One was from this book that I showed you last time. That's
You mentioned it.
By a non-Jewish, by a priest. That was, I've forgotten his name. I don't have it here.
Okay.
Yes. So at any rate, he discusses the question on the here are his conclusions on the development of the reading of the Torah. And then there's an article I xeroxed to you from Heinemann on the nature of the three-year cycle, in which he criticizes man pretty seriously. And then he says that the evidence shows that it wasn't exactly 3 years, but it was 3 years and a half, and it wasn't all that fixed. And then two articles on the nature of what was going on in the synagogue in
Batsarisa.
All right.
The shoes were based on the yeshivas. They were learning. The rabbi was there to learn.
Yeah, there was the base medrash, but the base knesset wasn't clear exactly what all the functions were.